Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from www.englishwithkirsty.com. Here I'll be sharing with you tips, information and other learning resources so that you can improve your business English. Everyone, and welcome to episode 63 of the English with Kirsty podcast. This week we're going to talk about problems with text that can make potential customers want to go elsewhere. So I don't know if you've had this experience, but you're looking at a website and you start to read and you just think, oh no, I'll find someone else who's selling the same services, or find a different company, I don't want to read this anymore. And obviously, if you're trying to sell something, if you have a business, you don't want people to respond like that to your text and your website. So I'm going to look at some of the problems that I've seen and how they can be fixed. Firstly, I want to be clear, I'm not saying that English has to be perfect in order to be taken seriously, because, for example, I speak German, I use German a lot with my customers, and I know that I make mistakes sometimes. Nobody's perfect, and even when you get your language skills to quite a high level, you can still improve them. So I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the things that people see, the first impression they get of your website. And so, for example, for things like that, if I'm doing a new advert or if I want to put up a page in German on my site, then I will get it checked. I'm not too proud to do that because I'm not a native speaker and I want things to be as good as they can be. But some of these things, just things that you can do on your own. And the first one is definitely something that everyone can do on their own, and this applies to native speakers as well as people who are learning English. It's checking. People can spend so much time on a text and then they don't check it, and it goes up with sometimes spelling mistakes, but more often than not, mistakes that have gone through the spell checker. So we were talking about this on the Facebook page the other day, and some of the things that I'd seen, like, click here to sign up for the course. I mean, who wants to sign up for a course? It's a terrible thing. It was supposed to say course, but there was the O was missing, so it said course. Or lick here instead of click here, or mangers often comes up instead of managers, and different things. So things that are actually words, so the spell checker won't pick up on them, but they are not the word that the person was looking for, so it's either funny or it's incorrect. Or the problem with the human nature is if you see one thing like that, you start looking for more rather than focusing on what the text actually says. So that's not a good thing. So check. If you're posting something online, read it through. It'll take you a couple of extra minutes, but it could save you an embarrassing situation if you publish something that you didn't mean to. And another thing is checking that you're actually saying what you want to say, and positive and negative sentences even, because one word, the difference between is and is not, can change the whole meaning of the sentence. Like, I was working, checking something for somebody, it was part of their website, and it was supposed to say, this company is not responsible for any content of external sites that are linked from here. And it said it was responsible for any content on external sites, and that's really leaving yourself open. So the difference between is and is not can be quite a big deal sometimes. Okay, so that's number one, just checking things through one more time just to see if there are any small errors that have got past you. Number two is something that happens particularly with longer texts, or maybe a research paper or something that people have been working on for a while. The problem there is that the writer can become too familiar with the text that they just don't see the mistakes. I think if you've read something so many times and you're going over and over it again, you sometimes don't see the really obvious mistakes that a fresh pair of eyes might notice. So even when I did my book, I got somebody to check it, because there may be things that I hadn't noticed, and the person who checked it did find a couple of things, which is great, and she found a number of formatting things which needed to be fixed, but there were a couple of things in the text as well. So it's always good if it's something that's long, if it's something that you've been working on for a long time, then it's often good to get a fresh pair of eyes, somebody to read through it and see if there's anything that you missed. So number three was an automatic translation tool used. And I know there are always I saw something today about with automatic translation being nearly as good as people, but I really don't believe that. It may be if you just want to get the message across to understand the what's being said in the text, but it doesn't mean that it will sound good or authentic. I think there is a place for automatic translation. For example, we were in Amsterdam last week and didn't know what some things were on the menus, and so we were using Google Translate to find out what certain words mean, because I want to know what I'm eating. But for something for my website or for communication with other people, then I wouldn't trust something like that, because if it's a language that you don't speak at all, then it could say something completely different and you wouldn't be aware of it. So if you don't want to get your whole website translated, and I don't think there's always a need to, I don't have everything in multiple languages on my website. There's some information in German, but it's not a one-to-one translation of the site. But if you don't want to get all your information translated into English, then it's better to have a summary, so less information but translated well, than the whole thing just run through Google. Because I do remember somebody saying to me, oh, would you have a look at something for me, it should be fine because I put it through Google Translate. And I basically said, no, that is not a translation, that is a mess. And it would be better for somebody to start off and translate it from scratch rather than to try and fix this terrible Google translation. So just be aware of the problems that can arise from automatic translations. And if you don't believe me, then get something in English and translate it back into your native language, and then you'll see how bad it is. Okay, number four is similar, but not. It's somebody has gone to the trouble of translating the text, but they've tried to translate it too closely to the original, so word for word, exactly as the original text was. And the problem with that is that it doesn't flow very well. It doesn't sound very good, because it sounds like a German or whatever other kind of text that has been translated rather than an English text. And there are things that you can sometimes spot when this has happened, or I can. You can think, oh, that's how the sentence would have been in German, and it's been translated into English. It doesn't work very well, but I can see the sentence structure or the choice of words, or sometimes the expressions, because some expressions really don't translate. Idioms, for example, they don't make sense in another language. So just be careful if you're translating something, try to stick to it so that you don't lose any of the meaning, but not so closely that it just sounds like a text that's been translated. Think about what would sound good in English rather than having all the words in the same order and expressing the ideas in exactly the same way, because that will come across and it will read as a translation rather than an English text. Number five is the choice of language right, and this is quite hard to judge sometimes in a language that isn't your native language, but the difference between formal and informal, familiar and professional, trying to get it right, because sometimes it looks really odd if you have a very formal text with a very casual word thrown in, or if somebody appears to be being too friendly with people that they don't know, or something that should be a really laid-back, friendly, casual text, and then suddenly there's a very formal expression in there that people may not even understand. So it's important to be consistent all the way through to decide who will be reading the text, how you want to communicate with them, and the kind of language that you want to use for that, and then to make sure that all the language you have used is appropriate for that audience and for that type of reader. Because otherwise you may confuse them, you may annoy them, you may make them think that they don't know what you're trying to achieve with your text. So it's important to be clear about that. Number six is the text culturally appropriate. And this is just something thrown in if you are writing specifically for an English market, not just using English as a means of communicating with a wider range of people, but if it's specifically for an English market, make sure that you know what are cliches and what English people are really like. There's no one English person stereotype. Everybody's different. But some of the stereotypes about English people are not helpful, and they don't show what life's like in England or what English people are generally interested in. So just try to keep away from stereotypes or ideas that people may have about English people, because some of them are things that we laugh about, like the cultural stereotypes. But if you're trying to market something, then you don't want to be appealing to those. And number seven, just to think about false friends, because you may think you know a word, you've seen it in your language, it looks like an English word, so it must be the right English word. Often this is true, and it's really helpful to have these words because you already know what they mean. But sometimes it is a problem because they have a different meaning in English, or they're not used in English anymore, they're words that we've moved away from, or they English people just wouldn't know what you mean. So just be aware of those. There are plenty of lists of false friends. I think I said I was going to do a podcast about them at some point, so I may come back to that idea, but have a look on the internet for false friends with English and your own native language, and you'll probably find a good list there, because lots of people have written about this subject. But anyway, be aware of these false friends, because they can change the meaning of your text or confuse your readers. So if you want to read a text version of this, I've written an article about this as well, so you can go onto my blog, or I will link it from the show notes page, which is www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast/episode63. And also, this month, so for people listening in the future, it's October 2016, I'm offering some taster sessions for the Good to Go service. So there are 10 taster sessions, first come, first served, and they are 30-minute sessions, so one session per person. And it's to show people what the English Good to Go service can do. So this is following on from this text here. Sometimes, you know, if you want somebody to have a look at and proofread one of your English texts, or to look at some examples of emails that you regularly send out, or a newsletter, some of your ideas for social media, or if you want help writing them, if you want something to be translated. So obviously with these 30-minute sessions, we need to be clear about what can be achieved in 30 minutes, but it will give you an idea of the kind of thing that the Good to Go service can do. So the taster sessions are free of charge, but there are only 10 of them, so if you're interested in them, then let me know. And get in quickly, because there are only 10. Also, there is further information about the Good to Go service on the website, so I'll link that from the show notes page as well, which again is www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast/episode63. So, hope the tips are useful. Have a look at the text version if you want to have a look at that, and if you are interested in one of the Good to Go taster sessions, I'm looking forward to hearing from you about that as well. So have a good week and have fun learning English. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.